tremendously exciting moment. It's into your head. Number 137. Now, we don't have any time at all to be dilly-dallying today. We have to get on with the show. I have a lot to get through. I have a big list here it's not a list. It's a menu. It's a menu containing all of the main programs that I use in Windows on a day-to-day basis. And it's got absolutely nothing to do with the content of the show whatsoever, other than that it's mentioned here and therefore is content. So I suppose technically it's got everything to do with the content, so that was a lie, an unintentional one, but a lie nonetheless. If I go along and point a gun in your face and pull the trigger and it results in the bullet going into your face and killing you, that may well be unintentional murder, but it's murder nonetheless. Well, it's manslaughter, I suppose, because murder is when you do it intentionally. It's manslaughter if there's less intent involved. Although, of course, that legal definition varies from country to country. In some way, you can go to some countries where you can punch someone in the face and it's considered a form of greeting. It's their version of a handshake. And then in other countries, you can go up to someone, point a gun in their face, and as long as you don't pull the trigger, it's just considered threatening them. It's not attempted murder unless you pull the trigger. Now, if the trigger gets stuck and you try to pull it but nothing happens and it doesn't budge, that could be considered an attempted murder, but they'd have to prove that your finger applied pressure to the trigger. And you can't tell that by just looking at you, because the trigger doesn't move at all because it's stuck. So you could just say that your finger was resting on the trigger, but it wasn't attempting to push it at all. And they'd have no way of knowing that, unless they had some sort of worldwide pressure monitor that monitored the movement of all air in the world ever at any point, and they'd go back and check on that. Now, there's probably been a movie made about that at some point, but I don't know what it's called. There was certainly one with Tom What's-His-The-Face in it about, well, not quite about that, but about something similar, where there was people living in a swimming pool who can remember everything that hasn't happened yet, and they know when there's a crime about to happen, and they go and arrest the person for pre-crime. It was an absolutely fantastic movie. That old guy who used to be in Yes Minister was in it. He's dead now. Except that was a different movie. That was a completely different thing. That was the one with your man and what's her name, Sharon Stone, and what's his name who played the boxers in other movies, but not that one. He was playing someone else in that movie, and so that's it. So that was a completely different thing. Don't allow yourself to get confused between two movies just because they're from the same genre and have reasonably similar storylines. That doesn't make them the same. If they were the same, you wouldn't watch both of them. You just pick one and watch it. Or else, I suppose, if it was particularly good, you could watch both. Or just watch one of them, but watch that twice. But since they're both the same, effectively, there's no difference between watching each version once or watching one version twice, because there's no difference whatsoever. It's the same movie, or maybe it's a remake, I don't know. Maybe someone watched it twice and decided this is a great movie, I'm going to remake it in modern times, I'm going to remake the story of Jesus, for example, and set it in the 23rd century, and Jesus is he's not a carpenter anymore, he's a computer programmer. And he goes around compiling Apple iTelephone applications like there's no tomorrow. He's got one of those ones, that's a Bible. I've got a Bible app on my iTelephone, and every now and then a massive update gets released for it, and they update the Bible. Now, I don't read it myself, I assume that they're issuing new testaments everywhere. There's new gospels coming out, and they're adding bits to the story, because of course they're able to find out more information now in the age of the internet. This is the information age. We're all able to go around all over the place gathering information without having to move from our desks at all. We can just sit tapping into a computer. We can type into a box and say, I want information about this. Actually, let's do that now. Let's go to Google. And I'll do that. I'll type this. and press search. And there we go, straight away at my fingertips. Well, for one thing, it's found 44,340 results on my own computer. And then it has the first result on the internet is Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. The second result is This American Life. Now, I'm not going to go through all the results because there are 7,900,000,000 of them. Or is that, oh no, 7-something-900,000,000,000. Wherever, what's the one that's bigger than the billion? I presume it's a trillion or a zillion. Anyway, there's 7-something-illions and 900,000,000,000 of them. Since I don't know the proper term, I'll say it's 7,900,000,000,000. And apparently it found all of those in 0.09 of a second. It's absolutely fucking fantastic. So there, that just goes to show the information is at our fingertips nowadays. You can go and put your fingertip onto a touch screen and press it and type something, the stuff will just come up, and then you have the information. But everyone else has it too, so you don't have any advantage anymore if you have information. If I have a set of Collier's encyclopedias in my bookcase right behind me, as it happens, I do have such a thing. I may be at an advantage today, ironically, because nobody else owns encyclopedias anymore. So I've got 26 volumes of information that nobody else has, and what's more, I have 2 bibliographies and index volumes that sorts the information and makes it more accessible. The rest of you are so busy having your international networks of computers that you don't even bother to own an encyclopedia anymore. I've got this. It's absolutely fantastic. It's basically a set of books, and you can look stuff up. You can look up the words books, for example, and there'll be a whole section all about books, and it'll tell you all about them. It'll tell you what they are and what they're made of and who writes them and what's in them. Ironically, it'll say what's in them is this stuff that you're reading now in this book. That's what's in them. So it's a vicious circle whose radius is pi times r. This is an interval. I won't say it's an interval act because it's not. Nothing is going to happen during it. If it was an interval act, you would expect it to contain some content. But no, it's not an interval act. But that's not to say that it's not a good thing. Sometimes a gap or a break or a space between segments is good. Like a musical interlude or just a bit of silence so people can go out and go for a piss and take in and digest what they've heard so far and get ready for the second act. Ask any theatre critic and they'll tell you the silent bit in the middle is sometimes the best bit. It's like when you're designing a room and you remember that empty spaces serve their purposes, or if you're designing a logo, there's absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, sometimes it's good to have some empty white space around the letters or the characters that are in the logo. Ask any logo creator and they'll tell you that, except the bad ones, they won't tell you that, or some of the good ones won't tell you that because they think they're the only one who knows and they don't want to take away from their business by telling other people their secrets. Now, there was a time when it used to be the only magicians were protective like that, but then of course Penn and Teller came along and they said, here's how the magicians do stuff, that guy isn't really pulling the rabbit out of his hat, he's pulling the rabbit out of his arse, because he stuffed the rabbit up his arse earlier. Of course magicians hate Penn and Teller for this reason. They don't like people going around telling their audiences where the rabbit has stuffed up. Not least because they want these shows to appeal to children. And parents aren't going to bring their children to a show if they know or suspect that the person running the show has a rabbit stuffed up his arse and is going to remove it at some point. Even though, if they left it in and didn't remove it, they'd probably be even more unhappy, because you can't please anybody at all nowadays. They want everything to be done properly, they want magic to be magical, they don't like Penn and Teller, and frankly, everyone's crap. So anyway, that's why we need intervals. You need a break in the proceedings. If this were a theatre, you'd be able now to go out for a piss or go and purchase some popcorn. Do they sell popcorn in theatres? I'm not sure. I'd say they don't sell it in opera houses anyway. They probably sell posh teas and caviar. Of course, us commoners just go to the cinema. We can get popcorn there and all sorts of fizzy drinks that will kill us in time, but not before we find out who killed Harry Potter and who else dies in the last book that we were too lazy to read, so we went to the movie. So anyway, this is the interval. It looks like it's going to be 3 minutes long, and I think that's perfect length. It's 8 minutes into the show, and already we've learned all of this stuff. We've learned all about encyclopedias, and where else would you learn about something like that other than on into your head? Where else could you possibly learn about encyclopedias? It's not like you could learn about them from encyclopedias, because by definition, if you're in need of learning about something, you don't know yet that it exists. So you have to find out somewhere else. The first person to invent the book have to find out from somewhere else what a book is. Or he had to basically make it up. He basically made up books on the fly. He didn't know what a book was. He'd never heard of one. So he decided, he tripped over a rock for a start. Let's start at the beginning. He tripped over a rock, and he meant to say, ah, fuck. And he hurt his tongue in the process, so he accidentally said, ah, book. And then he said, oh, that's an interesting word. I wonder what it means. If only I had something that I could look this up in and find out what the word book meant. Maybe some sort of, a list of words that contain definitions of what those words were. But unfortunately that hasn't been invented. So I'll have to decide what a book is. I'll have to make up a definition myself. I have an idea. Maybe that very thing that I don't have, in which I can look up the definition of book, could be called a book. Because that kills two birds with the one stone. So that's basically what happens, and the rest is history. The book got invented, and the first book was a dictionary, and the first word in the dictionary was the word book. And then later he revised it and decided that the words needed to be in alphabetical order or else numerical order. So eventually he got some advice from his investors, because inventors, of course, aren't always the most business or marketing knowledgeable people. They're more good at inventing than doing business. But he got in an investor who advised him on all that, and he said the book had to have a proper interface that a reader could understand without having to learn how to use it, because then if they didn't know how to use it, you'd have to sell them another book about how to use this book. But they wouldn't be able to read it because they'd never used the book before. That's all very fine if it's 2008 and you're creating the 10 millionth book ever written and everyone knows what a book is, but it's not going to work if you've just written the first book ever and you have to write the second book ever to explain what a book is and how to read it. So let's pull back on the reins there, cowboy inventor, and listen to your investor, because I know what I'm doing. Admittedly, I haven't invested in a book company before, but I've invested in the nearest thing. It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The egg came first. It was laid by a creature that was one small evolutionary step from becoming a chicken. And what came first, the book or whatever was there first? Well, obviously whatever was there first came first, and I, your investor, was an expert in the things that came just before books, so I'm the nearest you're going to get at the moment to being an expert in investing in books. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what was that thing before books that was one evolutionary step away from being a book? Well, I'll tell you. I'll send you a book sometime that'll explain all that for you. But in the meantime, just trust me. Now, if you'll all excuse me, I've been asked by God to write a book all about, well, I don't know if your business what it's about. All you need to know is that it's all true, and if you believe it, you're going to be great, you're going to live forever. It'll be like Superman, as long as you don't come into contact with Kryptonite or Satan, depending which one of those concepts you're considering. Kryptonite doesn't really apply for the Bible thing, but it applies for the Superman thing. So bear that in mind, whatever you do, and you live a long and fruitful life, and possibly an afterlife as well, because Superman enjoys an afterlife. There's been another movie made in the last few years about Superman, despite Christopher Reeve being dead. They found someone with similar eyebrows who could also pretend to fly, and it worked out very well, I have to say. People went and watched it in their droves, and then they went to the cinema. It was absolutely fantastic. Of course, they got sued by the police for watching pirate episodes of Superman movies in their droves, but then it was all fine, because it turns out the pirate version of Superman, it doesn't give away the ending, so you still have to go to see the real film, because the people who make the pirate episodes were bribed by the movie companies to not give away the ending. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking he made all that up, except a bit about the Bible and a bit about Superman, the stuff before that about how books were invented. Well, as far as I'm concerned, prove it. Otherwise, I'm legally entitled to be assumed innocent unless and until proven guilty of lying, and you need to shut your face.
If you would like to comment on any of the issues raised in today's programme, visit the
online voicemail system
at our website, intoyourhead.com, or email us at studio@intoyourhead.com. Remember, we value the opinions of you, the humble and ignorant listener.